Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time Netflix addict.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that recognizes death as the necessary end of life. There are, of course, those who believe in an existence in the great beyond, but the three films that we are concerned with this week's show all focus on the here and now, especially in terms of how the various characters respond to the question of life's extinction. The first is The Shrouds, a study by David Cronenberg of a man determined to maintain a connection with his recently deceased wife. Then there's Havoc, a film written and directed by Gareth Edwards that stars Tom Hardy as a troubled cop investigating a mass murder. Finally, we have On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, a look by the Zambian Welsh writer-director Rungano Nyoni at the life of several Zambian women following a death in the family. Let's start with the latest effort from the often strange career of Canadian filmmaker Cronenberg. And by strange, I don't mean bad, not necessarily anyway, and Nathan undoubtedly will explain the backstory there in just a minute or so. No, Cronenberg has always walked his own personal cinematic path, from his early days of making low-budget horror films such as 1977's Rabid, which I saw during a Friday night drive-in triple feature, through his more upscale features as 1986's The Fly, 1988's Dead Ringers, and on with 2005's A History of Violence and 2007's Eastern Promises. With The Shrouds, Cronenberg delves into the kind of world he imagined with 2022's awesomely weird Crimes of the Future. Vincent Cassell stars as Karsh, a producer of industrial videos who runs a restaurant-slash-mortuary business in which the dead are buried in tombs that let their loved ones see their bodies decompose. It's something that the grieving Karsh has done with his own wife, Becca, played mostly nude and only partially in one piece by Diane Kruger. While Cronenberg builds towards something of a climax, what with his dealing with characters played by Guy Pearce, Sandrine Holt, and Kruger doubling both as Terry, Becca's identical sister, and Honey, Karsh's avatar personal assistant, he adds in a lot of technical, conspiratorial mumbo-jumbo involving Russian and Chinese spying that is mostly just confusing. Then he ends things so abruptly, so open-endedly, that you might wonder, do I have to wait for The Shrouds 2 to discover what all of this is supposed to mean?
Well, this doesn't happen very often on the show, but I need to retract some comments I made on an earlier episode because I saw The Shrouds last month at the Overlook Film Festival. And if you recall, in the recap I did of that, I said that this was the biggest disappointment I had at the festival and that I did not like this movie. I went back and saw it again last night, and I got way more out of it the second time to the point that I've come around to liking it, or at least admiring it, because I don't know if this is the kind of movie that you can like. And you're right.
That could apply to most of Cronenberg's
movies. I know, we say appreciate.
Yeah. I admire it, yes. Yeah. And you're right that the mystery plot of The Shrouds is confusing, but on the second time around, knowing its outcome from the beginning, let me focus on what the movie's actually about. Because ultimately, this is a film about all the ways we distract ourselves from grief or try to justify all the complicated feelings that come with it. And Cronenberg literalizes that idea in the form of these ridiculous conspiracy plots that each of the characters has dreamt up in order to create some sense of order in their lives. Of course, that's kind of the theory about conspiracies, is that they do provide order in the face of chaos. And in the case of Karsh's sister-in-law, played by Diane Kruger, it's to fuel some kind of weird sexual fetish that she has for conspiracies. Although on the Cronenberg continuum, that's really not that weird of a sexual fetish if you've seen some of his other movies, like Crash, namely. And Cronenberg made this movie, The Shrouds, in the wake of his own wife's death.
In 2017.
And the whole thing does sort of feel like it's in a fugue state. And I fell under that fugue state this time. And I've had that experience with quite a few Cronenberg movies over the years because his style is so odd and deliberately off-putting, and his intentions can be very cryptic, that sometimes they don't work for you right away, or they just never work for you at all. Like, you just never really get on its wavelength. And I was also surprised on the second time around that the movie moved much quicker than it seemed to the first time around. The first time around, I thought, I feel like I'm trapped in here in these characters' kind of madness. They're just running in circles. And this time
I shrouded, so to speak.
There you go. And this time, and by the way, the shrouds look very similar to the medical garments in Dead Ringers. So there are little echoes to his other movies. And as for the ending, which seemed, I agree, the first time around, I thought, well, that was abrupt. And what was that about? It hit much harder the second time around because, to me, it suggests that Karsh may be able to finally get on with his life, but whatever relationships he has here on out will always be defined by and haunted by this grief that he feels. And the final images of the movie, I think, are really powerful, especially in the context of what Cronenberg is working through in this movie. So, again, I understand not for everyone. In fact, it was not for me at one point in time, but I've really come around on this movie. And even as I was watching it the first time, I thought, I bet you the second time I'm going to get more out of it. And boy, did I. So, yeah,
so
there's a 180 for
you. Are you suggesting that everyone watch this movie twice?
No, I'm not suggesting that. But for me, it was necessary.
Yeah.
Okay. So Cronenberg will always, in my mind, be defined by dead ringers.
Mm-hmm.
And
when we first started dating,
horrifying
you couldn't
story,
talk. You just
right,
talked
I couldn't.
About dead
yeah,
ringers.
I was like horrifying, like twin gynecologists, and then it was remade as a miniseries with female protagonists. So I'm not sure I understood that. We did watch a couple episodes, but we're not able to follow through. So I agree, Nathan, that this is a movie about grief and deep grief and all of the different, I think, manifestations of that plays out differently in various ways depending on the individual. And we can see at different points in time, the Vincent Cassell character, Karsh, is trying to move forward, but yet he's going to be permanently, as you indicated, stuck in this place to some extent. So how can he make a world, make a life around that particular situation or scenario? So just to talk a little bit about the performances, I really liked Vincent Cassell in this movie. He sort of reminded me of David Cronenberg or David Lynch in the way that they have his hair styled and so forth. And Diane Kruger's playing the two parts.
I didn't even recognize her as the sister.
Yeah, I mean, because she plays them so differently. And she doesn't even really look physically that similar. Although at one point when she's sort of trying to seduce Karsh, she says something in the shrouds to the effect that, oh, is my body the same as hers? And I was like, well, probably, but, yeah. You know, just saying.
Except it's more together because.
Right. Oh, it's yeah. all intact. Yeah. But the whole underlying premise I found to be fascinating because people, I would think, would want to know or try to project what's happening, but maybe not quite to the extent that he goes.
Yeah. You mean cameras in yes. an actual casket or maybe a bridge too far?
Yeah, you know, yeah. When you talk about performances, Mary Pat, you don't talk about Guy Pearce,
yeah.
who is amazing in this film, and he's exactly the opposite of the character he played in The Brutalist, which won him an Academy Award nomination. I thought he was terrific.
Yeah, he was creepy, though.
Yeah, he was creepy.
Yeah, because, it's a Cronenberg film. But
and there's the notion of, well, he lost his fingers. The Russians took it. Well, he's always lost those. He lost them in high school. What?
Well, I want to go back to the idea that Karsh, and by the way, that is such a prototypical Cronenberg character name, Karsh. Like, it almost sounds synthetic. Like, it's not
right.
quite right.
It's not like, Crash. It's like, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, but even when it comes out of your mouth, like, Karsh, like, it is Karsh itself. The fact that he could be an avatar for Cronenberg, and as you mentioned, he's sort of styled like Cronenberg is in real life, is also fascinating because Karsh, as we start to learn, seems to only be able to relate to his dead wife as a body. All of the times that we see her are in dreams or pictures or memories, and they're all either sexual or they involve her literal biological decay. And surely that is how Cronenberg has approached most of his characters over the years, as bodies on which he can inflict these various themes and fascinations that he has. At one point,
all the way back to Rabid.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. At one point, Terry says, you know, you've made a career out of bodies. She says that to Karsh. And of course, you're meant to think, well, so has Cronenberg. And so there are all these really almost unsavory parallels that I found really interesting. And it does make you think, is this how Cronenberg actually feels about the grief process? Does he feel guilty about it in some way? Is he trying to justify something? And I haven't quite unlocked that yet, and I don't know if I ever will.
And I still am struggling a little bit with the Sandrine Holt character,
yeah.
Su Min, and how she fits into the narrative overall. But I don't know if I'll see it again, Nathan, but okay. I trust your instincts about, you know, it's playing out differently the second time around.
And we have to trust Nathan that it's not for everybody.
No, There were lots of snickering in the theater that I just saw it in. So I know for a fact it's not for everybody. But yeah, I don't know. Take a chance on it. Maybe take two chances on it.
Anyway, that was our discussion of The Shrouds, David Cronenberg's latest film. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss the Netflix streamer Havoc and the African feature On Becoming a Guinea Fowl. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed David Cronenberg's new film, The Shrouds. Let's now turn to a couple of other films that deal with death as a theme, if not actual inspiration. The first, Havoc, is from writer-director Gareth Edwards, and the second, which carries the intriguing title On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, is from writer-director Ngannou Nyoni. Let's start with a bit of big city mayhem. Though the city in question resembles Batman's Gotham, it remains unidentified, though, strangely enough, most of the scenes were shot in the country of Wales. It is there, anyway, that we watch a hijacking take place, with police pursuing a speeding truck in an action-packed sequence typical of writer-director Edwards, who gained fame with his 2011 film, The Raid Redemption. Then we shift to watching Police Detective Walker, played by Tom Hardy, trying to buy a last-minute Christmas present for his young daughter. Gradually, we discover that Walker is tied to the cops who were chasing after the stolen truck, that he is in a dark emotional place because of some past indiscretion, and that his somber mood overshadows everything he does, including his investigating the drug-related murders that prompted the hijacking in the first place. Edwards has woven a complicated plot involving rampant corruption and disloyalty among all the various Confederates, cops, politicians, and members of a Chinese triad gang group that ends up getting explained in the end, though that ending, while satisfying, if maybe a tad too convenient, is hardly happy for all involved.
I guess that would be a gross understatement, Dan, in terms of the happiness quotient, because what I would say is, I want to be clear from the beginning, Havoc might have the highest bullet count and blood count of any movie I've seen maybe in my entire life. So, and that's a pretty strong statement, but keep it in mind as we go forward. Of course, could you go wrong by casting Tom Hardy in anything? Probably not, but we might have some differences of opinion there. The problem with Havoc, I think, is, and I did enjoy it, maybe that's too strong, but I did appreciate the film in various ways, but it's almost too predictable. We don't actually know who all the moving parts are. There are good performances by Thomas Hardy and by Forrest Whitaker and Luis Guzman in particular. But the story overall, we don't know enough and we know too much at the same time to sort of piece it together. And I got almost bored with the violent sequences because some of them were so over the top. You're kind of like, how much do we have to endure in order to get through this movie? But it's sort of, so my problem is, I think it was cliched on the one hand because you have these brooding police officer, not sure who are the good guys or the bad guys, but it's definitely energizing and there's a lot that happens. So if you're into action movies, this may be the quintessential action film.
I don't know about that. I will say, though, that Havoc does have a few inspired moments of carnage, one involving a spear gun and the other involving a washing machine.
Yeah.
And I do have to admit, I had never seen that before, so I'll give it props for that. But there were so many scenes in this movie that really just made me appreciate all over again how artfully made the John Wick movies are, because this
Havoc
resembles
is not
it.
In that category.
No, and it resembles it a lot. I mean, it's, you know, set in a grim world where everyone seems to be either a cop or a criminal or a killer or all three, usually all three. And it even has a scene of mayhem is the right word set in a packed nightclub where it takes people way too long to realize that all these bloody fights are happening. But those movies, the John Wick movies and the Raid movies that Edwards directed before this, they have almost like a beauty in their mayhem. And, you know, they're sort of wonderfully demented. And he tries to do the same thing here. But
and there's a ballet.
Exactly.
To right. both those, that, all those
and that's
movies.
Why his Raid more resembles the sort of South Korean movies.
Totally. Yeah, like classic martial arts movies, but, you know, with the blood and guts amped up. And they just have a sense of rhythm and space where you can tell where one person is in relation to the other. That's actually really important in these kinds of movies. And even sort of like a comic logic to it that this doesn't really have because it is so chaotic and jumbled. And I also just don't like the way that he shoots this movie, Havoc. Too much of it just looks like video game cutscenes.
Yeah, it's almost cartoonish.
Yeah, with the green screen backgrounds and this CGI whip pans. It reminded me of the remake of Roadhouse, which did suck more than this does. Because this at least, like, I don't think this is a terrible movie by any means. It's just, it is generic from its title on down. And that's not what I expect from Tom Hardy or from Gareth Edwards, who have done such great work in the action space before.
Yeah, I
mean,
you said generic, and that's probably a better description than I said cliched.
And though adding to all this is the notion that every single time one of Walker or his partner, played by, I guess I can't even remember the actress's name, but every time they shoot off a gun, five or six people die. When those people fire back at them, they miss.
Oh, of course.
Even
of
though
course.
It's 8 million shots yeah, yeah. at them. You know,
I mean, you could do worse, but yeah. I think my expectations were a bit high because the
well,
Raid
after
movies,
Raid Redemption?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And Raid 2. If you haven't seen those are worth a look.
Absolutely. At any rate, that was our discussion of the Netflix streamer Havoc. Let's now turn to a feature film written and directed by the Zambian Welsh filmmaker Rungano Nyoni. The film is titled On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, and it introduces us to Shula, played by the British Zambian actress model Susan Chardy. While driving one night along a rural back road, Shula passes what she recognizes as the body of her Uncle Fred lying prone on the pavement. This starts a succession of events that probe the very meaning of Zambian life, but particularly in the ways that death is handled and how, not surprisingly, women are held in check by male-centric tradition. It has left to Shula to break out, if she can, from her country's cultural past and adopt the ways of the guinea fowl, specifically as someone who can sound the alarm when predators are on the prowl.
Well, I saw this movie having no idea what it was about. I just knew that it had won a directing award at Cannes and it had gotten mostly rave reviews. And I'm glad that I went into it cold because the way that it reveals its true motivations is both thrilling and harrowing. And that's in keeping with how the characters themselves have had to keep all these feelings bottled up inside. And I keep seeing this movie, On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, described as a quote-unquote dark comedy. And it certainly has a streak of satire in it, but this movie left me with a pit in my stomach. And the last 15 or 20 minutes are surprising and weird and shattering.
And predictable at the same time.
It's not so much predictable, it's that it's following the logic of
right.
what has come before
yes,
in
yes.
a way that is both satisfying and leaves you wondering what's going to happen next. And we hardly see any men in the movie, and that's because they're deliberately separated from the women. And in this house where all these women have gathered, a couple of them keep disappearing into this pantry to drink and to kind of whisper to each
the
other.
Younger
first,
ones, yes.
First there's one, then another, and we don't quite know why at first. And then we start to figure it out. And then by the end, seemingly everyone is crammed into this pantry. And certainly that's emblematic of everything that Nyoni is trying to say in this
well,
movie.
And it's hard to decide how much to reveal, but I'm just going to put it out there because I do think that this could be a trigger film for some
oh, sure.
people. So
yeah.
On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, great title, does talk about multi-generational sexual abuse. It also sort of showcases this misogynist culture. I mean, these women wait on the men in the family. I mean, wait on them like as in serve them. It seems as though being a man in this particular segment of the culture allows you a lot of privileges.
And what's really strange about it is the women buy into it, particularly the older women. It's like, this is how it has always been. This is how family is important. Honor is important.
Right. But I think it's also the trauma that they've dealt with is so deep that they just can't deal with it directly. And it reminds me of this documentary that we saw a few years ago called Relative, and it was by an Italian-American filmmaker. And there were multi-generational incidents of abuse throughout mm-hmm. this family, and everyone knew something about it, knew part of the story, but they never confronted directly. And it's sort of like, well, you know, let's let bygones be bygones.
We don't want to break up the family.
Right. And that is a recurring theme here as well. And
it's complicity and complacency. Mm-hmm. At the same time.
Yeah. Perfect way to describe this. So I was impressed by the visuals in this movie, too, because it, at various points, it almost has a documentary feel. And that's something that we can talk about with African films generally, because I like that about them.
Yes. And I was reminded of the work of Ousmane Sembene. I'm probably mispronouncing his name, but he's the groundbreaking Senegalese filmmaker. And he's dealt with issues of colonialism and patriarchy in movies like Black Girl and Mulade, which has a lot in common with this movie. And then Rungano Nioni's previous feature is called I Am Not a Witch, which is another movie that mm-hmm. we liked a lot.
Yep.
And that movie had more overt magical realism in it than On Becoming a Guinea Fowl does. But they both have these threads of surrealism that run through them as they're looking in a very unflinching, sometimes, as you said, almost documentary-like way. But then it will sort of tip into almost like a dream world. And mm-hmm. the way that those coexist is both wonderful and exciting, but menacing and unsettling at the same time.
And that dream world is often not even explained. For example, when Shula goes to the university to pick up her young cousin, Bupe, there's water everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere, all over the floor. And it's not explained.
And I love that it's not explained.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. No, this...
Although it's realistic that that could probably happen.
Well, and then the rising water becomes sort of a running
motif
throughout the movie. And yeah, the way that it's exploring all of these things in a way that just keeps you on your toes. Again, it's exciting, but it can be a tough sit.
And Dan, you explained On Becoming a Guinea Fowl and its importance, because we do in the end think, oh, well, maybe somebody's going to sound the cry or blow the whistle, but we're never really sure how that's going to play out.
That's right. Guinea fowls are known for that, both the domestic ones and the ones in the wild. So at any rate, that was our discussion of the film On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, which is streaming on several services. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbend and Ray Pat Truthart and I discussed both David Cronenberg's The Shrouds and Gareth Edwards' Havoc. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late, great Mark Twain. I do not fear death. I had been dead for billions and billions of years before I was born and had not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.